more injuries, and what they do, taking away the they're taking away one preseason game, which none of the starters played in anyway.
Right, right. Yeah.
But they're also really doing, they're knocking out 40% more of the padded practices in training camp, and so to me, it's never been a health and safety issue. I'm not doubting the sincerity of the players. It's about getting paid, guys. I mean, that's why you play the game, and this is awful. I mean, if the players got crushed in 2011. This is going to be worse with what I know about the deal so far. And the one part, getting back to your initial point, is whatever they do with the rookie deals, there's no way they're going to be able to go back and retroactively say that a contract that Mitch did 4 years ago
right.
suddenly has the fifth year guaranteed. So it's not a concern right now. Going forward, this is just the owners forcing this down their throats. We're going to talk a lot about it in the next couple hours. I got to spend about an hour with Trace Armstrong in Indy. I'm trying to remember what night it was. It was Wednesday night. And, of course, Trace was a finalist for the executive director position along with DeMarie Smith when Smith got it in 09. And even though Trace is in the representation business now, he's more knowledgeable on this than most folks I know. And this is just a power play by the owners, pure and simple. And why the union leadership is convincing these players to do this a season early is a mystery to me, unless they're just convinced that not only is it not going to get better, that it could get worse if they don't do it
just,
now.
There's got to be a bigger deal, a better deal to hold out for, right?
Yep.
And I don't know, but I'm going to tell you one big problem that's going to come out of CBA, and it's going to be coaches trying to get their teams ready to play an NFL season with so little practices, so little padded practices, and so little time with the players. I don't know. This whole thing is going to have to change, and the coaching staffs and the people prepping the players for the season are going to have to become really efficient at what they're doing.
I've always thought, Olin, that leads to more wide open football as the year goes on, right? I mean, if we're not hitting and doing the things we used to do, you're going to have to find coaches who are able to coach scheme that way, who are able to adapt to practices where you don't do that kind of stuff. And that leads to the kind of, I would guess, the kind of scoring that the NFL would like to see anyway in their product.
Maybe, and it always gets to the end of the playoffs, and then the refs put the flags away, and defense in a run game takes over, unless you have a guy named Patrick Mahomes. But, one position that you can just take a look at, and everybody keeps saying, what's wrong with offensive line play? It takes so many hours and so many reps and guys working together and learning how to play with each other. And I think that's one group that you've seen has been affected a lot by the fact that there's not a lot of padded practices anymore. There's not a lot of time to work together and get to know each other really well, because the offensive line is always, you got to be really, really good as a group, work really well together, and now there's just not a lot of time to get that cohesiveness together.
Olin, what have you heard from current players? What's their feeling right now on a potential 17 games as a season? Because, I mean, I know you do away with one preseason game, but adding that extra regular season game, and towards the back end, that's when things really get a little muddied up.
Yeah, and it's an interesting question, right? Because there's, as you can see, all just through Twitter, there's two groups of current players, right? There's the group that's doing really well, the Russell Wilsons, the J.J. Watts, and they're against it. And there's the group that, to be honest, they're not even thinking about it, right? Because they just want to get ready. They want to make a team. They just want a contract. So there's two very opposite groups in this. And I think the numbers came out, Hub, I think it was like 60% of the league makes like a million or under. So, there's just two different outlooks on what's actually going on with the CBA. The guys who, they can't really think about it because they got to think about actually getting a job. And then there's guys who, they're set, they're pretty well off, and they're really looking at all the details. And to be honest with you, not a lot of details have really come out. So none of us really know, unless you're in the meeting with the executive committee, none of us really know what's really in there and what's not.
Yeah, guys, we really have to take a pause, because allegedly there are significant gains in pension benefits for retired players. And this is something that was not taken care of in 09, and I'm sorry, in 11, and it needed to be taken care of. There's also additional benefits with health care. There's annuity plans. There's post-career planning. A lot of stuff in here that we don't know about yet. But at the end of the day, here's what we do know. Back in 2009, when DeMarie Smith got the job, he ran around for 2 years saying, I'm not giving the owners a blank check. We're getting 53 to 57% of the revenue. They're offering us 42%. We're not going to do it. We're not going to do it. We're not going to do it. And then a month before the 11th season started, they signed a deal where they accepted 47%. So I ran the math And the accepted figure prior to the 11 deal is that the players were getting 53% of the revenue, total football revenue in the old agreement. So I ran the math on what that 6% cost the players based each year on the increase. $6 billion that the owners took out of the players' pocket over the 9 years of this deal. In this deal, they're going from 47 to 48.5% of total football revenue when the 17-game season starts, which won't be until at least 21. Yeah. So you're signing up for another 10 years where at the end of those 10 years, you're still going to be 4.5 percentage points of revenue below where you were 20 years ago. And you're now talking about like $15 billion that the owners have taken back from the players. That's what this deal is all about.
And you take a look at it, right? The streaming services, gambling's now legal. These TV deals are probably going to be astronomical, which is why the owners want to get it done now, because you have to imagine with them rushing this deal and trying to get it through, the numbers they've been kind of talking about already are probably through the roof, which if they presented that to the executive committee and they took a look at it and everybody was like, well, we're all going to do pretty well on this deal, and this is the best deal that's coming, then what as a player, what are you waiting for?
Well, and here's guys, and I know we got to run, but here's why this deal is absolutely going to pass. Nobody's doubting that. Smith came out and said this morning he knows it's going to. You've got 20% of the players making the minimum salary, and you've got 60% of the players, as Olin just mentioned, well below the average. The median and the average, obviously very different things. What is in this deal is in the first year of the deal, minimum salaries are going to go up about $90,000 a player. Mm-hmm. So you've got more than half the union that on day one gets a $90,000 raise. These are guys with 3 or 4 year careers who, after their careers, 80% of them are never going to make half in a year what they're making at the minimum salary, and they only need half the players plus one to vote to pass this. They've taken the money from the players that are getting paid on the top end. They're giving it to the players on the bottom. The owners are still keeping a lion's share of it, and they're going to get it done, and then it's going to be 9 more years or 10 more years of players complaining about why do we sign that deal.
Now you divide the work.
Said, Hub, none of us know what's in the deal. So before we crush these guys for signing it, I mean, we got to take a look at everything that is actually in the deal for the players.
Fellas, looking forward to hearing you chop things up. Always loving you two are on. I'll tell you what, you're listening to WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago, Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com station. Cole, it has been fun. We'll turn over to Hub and Olin Krutz live from the Golf Show. Fellas, have a great afternoon.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station. Sitting in for Lawrence Holmes, it's now time for Hub Arkish and Olin Krutz, live from the 37th Annual Chicago Golf Show, presented by French Lick Resort on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Chicagoland Golf Show. We're out at the Donald Stevens Convention Center in Rosemont. Top of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join the Wildcats at Welsh Ryan Arena for their regular season finale against Penn State on March 7th. Tickets on sale now at nusports.com. And this hour on The Score is being brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-KARS, the number 4 kids, and welcome in again. It's so good to be with you. We got a couple hours here, and Olin, good to see you. Haven't visited in a little while. I'm just back from Indianapolis last night. Combine was interesting, and got a chance to visit with Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace for the first time since New Year's Eve, really, since their season-ending press conference. So we have a little better sense of what's going on with them. But before we even get into any of this, I know you're a golfer. I'm not.
Right, yeah.
I
use that word loosely, though.
That's not what I hear. I talk to some guys you play with who tell me that you can take them in a scotch game pretty regularly. But this really is an impressive show. I know just getting in from parking and seeing all the folks streaming in now, tons of great equipment, various teaching elements, course travel stuff. Really looks like an interesting show, and I'm curious. Your club's good? You here for a new set of clubs?
No, I'm not here for a new set. It's not the clubs that's the problem for me. It's the swing. But here at the Rosemont, I mean, this convention center is packed, Hub. I didn't expect this golf show to be this big. And talking to one of the guys who put it on the way in, he said it's probably the biggest public show in the Midwest that they put on. And it sure looks like it. I mean, if you're a golfer, get down here. They got everything you want in this place. I'm definitely going to take a walk around when we're done with the show here. and see everything that they're offering, because this looks amazing.
It is the 37th annual Chicago Golf Show. It's presented by French Lick Resort. It's today through Sunday. We're here at the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center in Rosemont. I know we opened at noon today, and I think all day tomorrow and Sunday. You get free golf, free lessons, great deals, awesome travel destinations. There's a lot more. There are 300-plus vendors here where you can find deals on golf gear, apparel, destinations, a chance to win great prizes. You can sink the longest putt for a chance to win VIP tickets to the 2020 BMW Championship. Are they still playing that out of Conway, or did they move that?
They are going to have it again. I don't know if it's – I don't think it's this year, but maybe 2021 or 2022. One of those years they're coming back, I think.
Well, we know they play it every year, and you can win VIP tickets to this year's BMW Championship. You can also enter to win a golf weekend getaway for two from French Lick Resort at booth number 801. So you want to get to booth number 801. All kinds of other stuff, guys. There's a happy hour here from 4 to 7. There's trivia games. Lots of reasons to get out to the Donald Stevens Convention Center today. My golf expertise and knowledge has now been exhausted. So I'm going to move us back to where I came
mine
in.
Mine also, Hub.
You know, one of the things that really intrigued me at the Combine was when Matt talked on Tuesday. The first thing he did before he even took questions was he wanted to give a little intro to all the new coaches. I know that there was some, I had some bad feeling. I'm mad at anybody, but it troubled me that at the year-end press conference, we asked Matt if he was making changes, and he said, well, we just started to work on that, and then 45 minutes later, we found out that three coaches were gone. And then, you know, you get 8 weeks of silence. Well, now we know who these guys are. You look at, Bill Lazor is a respected offensive mind around the league. Comes with more pro experience than Mark Helfrich did, if not necessarily a stronger resume. You look at Juan Castillo, really not all that different from Harry Hiestand in resume-wise. You know, a longtime offensive line coach, respected, having been with a number of groups. And then at tight end, Clancy Barone. I think you got to argue that's an upgrade over Kevin Gilbride, only because Barone's been around. He's developed some great tight end talent. Gilbride was a younger coach. And then we're already calling him Flip, and we haven't met him yet. But apparently everybody calls John DeFilippo Flip. They were so determined to get him in to work with Mitch that they created a new job for Dave Ragone, who they didn't want to let go. And so the first concern I came away from with all this is I hope they're not telling us that they think that these new coaches are the answer to winning with the same talent, because I think we figured out by the end of the season that they needed to get better and more competitive at some of these positions.
Yeah, and when you watched the offense last year, you knew that they'd have a lot of questions, and you knew, Hub, that when they showed up at the Combine, there was no way they were going to answer those questions, and they let go, you know, Heffrick and Hiestand and Gilbride, and they brought in, you know, DeFilippo and Lazor and Barone, and they moved Ragone over. And DeFilippo, they seem to like the fact that he's aggressive and he really coaches the fundamentals hard and the footwork. And constantly talking about, Hub, and I'd like to get into this with you, is teaching Mitch how to process the field. They're constantly talking about that, which leads me to believe that we'll see a lot more of Mitch in the pocket, right, which he didn't do well last year. I don't want to just put a blanket over Mitch. I'd like to go into the offseason a little more positive. But when you're the 29th ranked offense in the league, and interesting to me how they always talk about they're going to improve the run game. Well, the run game was 27th. Their pass game was 25th. They average only 17 points a game. So, really, they need to improve everything, right? Yep. And they fired the guys who were the run game coordinators. That's what, you know, Heffrick and Hiestand, we heard that's what they were doing. But the pass game guys weren't doing too much better, and they're all still pretty much here, right? So it'll be very interesting what direction they go with this offense. They got to get better play from their tight ends. They got to get better play from their offensive line. They got two new coaches in. They definitely got to get better play from their running game. And then it all starts with their quarterback, Hub. And the reason why I say that is it starts with their quarterback because of the scheme they choose to run. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting to me, and you know just about a bunch of these guys as I do, is when you turn these guys' films on, and I'm talking about Lazor, DeFilippo, Juan Castillo, his last year in Buffalo when he worked with what's the guy from Alabama, the office coordinator now?
Dabo Swinney.
When he worked with the guy
Kirby
in Buffalo, I'll get the name before I screw it all up. But when he worked with the guy in Buffalo, their offenses look really similar, really similar, right? It's the read option. Really, Lazor likes to run a lot of Chip Kelly's scheme, which was what Heifer ran, right? So DeFilippo is obviously a spread guy, just like Nagy is. So you're wondering, after the offense you watched last year, you're wondering, Hub, where are the new ideas coming from? Are they just banking on, and here's my question for you, are they banking on that these guys are better at coaching the scheme that they've already been running?
That's kind of part of the take of my column from last night, Owen, is I think that is exactly what they're banking on. And that troubles me a little bit, quite frankly, because the coaches that were fired were not bad coaches. There is not a more respected offensive line coach in football than Harry Hiestand, and that includes Juan Castillo, who isn't of that ilk. I mean, you know, Juan's a good coach, too. But to suggest that the offensive line is going to be better because we swapped Harry Hiestand for Juan Castillo, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. You know, you are reading this as, you know, maybe they want Mitch in the pocket more. I'm not sure that's really what they're focused on so much as I know he had trouble with the RPOs and often made the wrong decision. I know that's one thing that they want him to process and read better. I know that they felt that too often he was checking down when, if he knew the offense better, a deeper route was going to open up even though it hadn't opened up yet. So I don't think it's trying to get him in the pocket more so much as different voices. There was two things that Matt said, and I'm quoting him almost directly now, that this is where I started to get a little concerned. He talked about nobody has ever worked offensive linemen harder than Juan Castillo has, and he's going to get great competition going, and yet they know he'll fall on the sword for him. That sounds like Harry Hiestand to me.
Right.
Then he also comes back, he talks about Filippo, DeFilippo. He said, you know, he takes the gloves off and he'll get on you and he'll push you. And it just sounded like a whole tough love thing. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know. I do know that Dave Ragone, I think, probably is more of the studious teacher type. I'm guessing he wasn't doing a lot of screaming. But it sounds to me like they think a lot of tough love may be the answer here. And I just don't know that was ever the problem.
Yeah, and you're hoping that, you know, they're right, because this is the offseason. You want to go in a positive direction. But all those things we saw from that offense, and really from week 14, right, the year before, when the offense really struggled, they struggled against the Eagles in that playoff game. I think they only scored 16 points in that playoff game. So they went into that offseason. I always think it's interesting to go back and look what they were saying after a successful year, Hub, or what they would consider a successful year before the double doink. Coach Nagy was at Indianapolis the year before in 2019, almost saying very similar. I want to get the run game fixed, right? Mitch, there's a quote out there. I read it. I didn't write it down, but Mitch comes to his office and says, coach me hard. I want you to coach me hard. Don't go easy on me. And now we're hearing kind of the same things at this combine where we want to really get the run game fixed. These new guys are going to coach these guys hard, right? And here's the problem with what you just said, Hubbard, and I know we got to go to break. Here's the problem with it. With the new rules we just talked about from the CBA, you cannot grind these guys anymore, right? So you got to find guys who are very efficient at coaching what they know, coaching their knowledge. And Juan Castillo from the old school, and so is Harry Hiestand. Everybody knows Harry Hiestand is a really good friend of mine, so I try to be really fair-minded when I study and review them hiring Juan over Harry. They have to adapt to these new rules and try to get this offensive lineman to play at a high level without as much time as they used to have with them.
All right, guys, here's what we're going to do. We've got a couple great guests lined up, thanks to Olin. Were you and Taylor together in Hellas Hall, or was he there
no,
after you?
Roberto Garza introduced me to him.
Okay.
I got to know him really well.
Taylor, but Dan Fabian, I can't believe. Good to see you. That man, he's to blame. He's the reason that I'm on the radio. This goes back a few years.
Sorry. No, thank you very much.
All right, guys, we got Taylor Boggs going to stop by. Taylor these days is working on training offensive linemen, preparing them for the NFL. He had a bunch of his guys getting ready to go to the combine. We're going to have Taylor fill us in on what it's like to get these guys ready, what you can accomplish, as well as being able to share some of his offensive line experience. That's going to be right on the other side of this break right here at The Score.
Spring training is on, and The Score is headed back to Arizona for Score House 2. Next Monday through Friday, can these Score guys survive under one roof as they try to cover both the Cubs and Sox? Score House. Far too much testosterone in one place. Score House. Who will watch it unfold live using the Radio.com app, plus incredible baseball guests live from Sloan Park and more on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Brought to you in part by Team Hochberg. Visit 56David.com.
Prescription products require an online physician consultation and are only available if the physician determines a prescription is appropriate. Subscription required. See website for full details and important safety information.
Hey, guys.